Okay, can we come to order? Eric, you want to say the pledge?
You will please join me in the pledge of allegiance. Ready to begin.
I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America,
to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Roll call.
Roll call. Director Mezqua?
Present.
Director Bilodeau? Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meek?
Here.
Director Nguyen? Director Sheldon?
Here.
Director Tran? Director Wigand?
Here.
Director Whitaker? Director Yeo?
Here.
You do have a quorum with six directors present.
Okay. Do we have any items too late to be agendized, received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Okay, good. Okay, this is a time for visitor participation. Anybody want to speak? We'll listen. Okay, next. Yeah. Okay. Next on the agenda is a resolution for Mike Marcus. Michelle, you want to come up?
Yeah. I hope you're applauding her.
Actually, I was hoping you were going to do the speaking. Thank you all for allowing me to be here. My name is Michelle Schutz. I'm here representing Assemblyman Trita, and we are here to give resolution to Mike Marcus for everything that he has done for the water community and all the many, many years you have served here, your leadership, and the ginormous projects that you have undertaken and all of your accomplishments here. So it's very much appreciated by the Assemblyman. He, as you know, is part of the board, and I know misses everyone and misses being a part of it. Miss is working with you as well. We hope you don't go too far. Maybe there's a board in your future one day too. Ooh. So thank you. Thank you so much again for everything though. And he wishes he could be here himself, but
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shall we? Let's take a picture. Yeah. Yeah. You want a picture with all of us, don't you? Yeah.
Madam President,
where are you going here?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you ask Mike, is he going to file for the board in August?
Okay. I wouldn't do that. No, he was asking me if I was going to apply for the board in August.
Mike lives in Director Bilodeau's district.
For the elections in November, Dennis is running. Saving up for Larry.
You got one more director.
Gosh. Let's go.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Happy birthday. You're here on your birthday. Now we all wish Director Bilodeau happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Okay, shall we move to the consent calendar? Do I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Madam President?
What?
Yeah, I had a question on item five on the retirement. I just had a real, if I could get a real general response, when an investment's red flag, just if you could, for those that were not able to make the retirement meeting, what are the steps involved and why? From a general, you know, few bullet points, if I may have some information on that, that would be great.
Do you know, Jason?
Yeah, I'll start. Red flagging means the investment fund is underperforming compared to the market. So we put it on a red flag, which means we're going to watch it more closely for the next few quarters. And if it does not start to improve in its performance, then we can remove it. But we have guidelines in our investment policy on exactly how we do that procedure. But we can
thank
have
you.
It. Was that sufficient?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Okay, okay.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Okay. Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Meeks?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
That motion carries with 8 yes votes, with Directors Nguyen and Whitaker absent.
Okay. Can we move on to the budget?
Sure. CFO Randy Fick is here to present our budget to the board. This is our draft budget. It's an informational item, so there's no action required tonight. And this will kick off for about 5 meetings with the board over the next 2 months to go into detail on different specifics of the budget. But Randy will give a good overview here tonight.
Thanks, John. Good evening, Madam President, members of the board. As John said, we have a overview of the draft fiscal year 24-25 budget. So here's the budget calendar. Seen it a couple times already. We had a kickoff meeting for the budget back at Admin Finance in December. And then in January, Admin Finance staff provided a preliminary RA and BPP numbers that were also provided to the producers to help them budget. And then this evening at the board meeting, we have an overview of the draft budget. So this will be followed by a number of meetings between now and the end of April. So we'll have a review of the water budget at next week's WIC meeting. And then at the producers meeting, we'll also have the same presentation for the producers and give them an overview of the draft budget for fiscal 24-25. At Admin Finance, we'll review the R&R budget component. And then moving into April at the WIC meeting, we'll review the capital improvement program budget, followed by the producers in April, which will be kind of an open discussion about issues that come up as a result of all these meetings with the producers and the board. And then we'll review the general fund in detail at April Admin Finance. And at the second board meeting in April, we'll have a public hearing to set the RA and BPP for the fiscal year 24-25, followed by consideration to approve the fiscal 24-25 budget. So here's a pie chart of the expenditures that we're planning for next fiscal year, total of $247.6 million. And we have 8 major expenditures that we have in our budget, and they're laid out here. We'll go over them in detail in subsequent slides. But for comparison purposes, in this fiscal year, this pie chart was about $270 million. Good evening. So starting with the general fund, the GM reviewed all 21 departments' budgets with the department managers. So this is for all the districts' wages, benefits, supplies, and services, broken into 21 departments, and the general manager sat down with all managers and reviewed each each department and each line item within that budget with the department managers. So this budget also includes $5.4 million of PFAS treatment O&M costs for the producers. So the total projected PFAS O&M for next fiscal year is about $10.8 million. The district pays 50% of that. And there's no increase in headcount. It's still at 226.5, so no increase planned for next year. And then it's about a $9.3 million increase in the general fund from this fiscal year to the draft budget for 24-25. It's largely made, the $9.3 million increase is largely a result of three items. One, wages and benefits is an increase. We're currently about $40 million this budget year for wages and benefits. That would increase to about $43 million next fiscal year, about a 7.5% increase, largely made up of a 4.5% COLA in July, and then a 3% merit for the year. And then we have an increase in utilities of about $4.7 million, largely electricity for the groundwater replenishment system, followed by an increase in the PFAS O&M from $3.5 million for the district to about $5.4 million for next fiscal year. And why this increase? It's largely due to resin replacement in the PFAS treatment projects for Yorba Linda, Garden Grove. Those are the bigger ones. There's a few smaller ones, but this is will be the first year that we'll have resin replacement. We didn't have any budgeted for this year. So the water budget. So in the budget, we have 3,000 acre feet that we have purchased from Long Beach Water to inject into the Alamitos barrier. It's the same as this year, projected for next year. And then we pay the MET rate for that water. And then no purchases of MET water to recharge. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One, we're getting more water out of the groundwater replenishment system now that the final expansion is complete. We also have less pumping because of PFAS projects. So had we not had PFAS projects, the pumping would be higher, but now that's lower than we would expect. The other thing is the water budget, the physical water budget for next year shows us replenishing or having additional water of 21,000 acre feet, because what we're recharging between the different components, between the replenishment system, between the Alamitos barrier and the supplies coming down the Santa Ana River, base flows, storm flows, and incidental recharge is projected to be at 313,000 acre feet. And the projected pumping is 292,000 acre feet for next year. Thus, the overdraft would reduce by 21,000 acre feet. We're projecting to have an overdraft at the end of this fiscal year of 168,000 acre feet. When we reduce that by 21,000 acre feet, we're looking at to be the lower end of our operating range of 150,000 acre feet to 200,000 acre feet, on the lower end of that of 140,000 acre feet overdraft. So we think the basin's going to be in pretty good shape at the end of this fiscal year and next fiscal year as a result of these items. So the CIP budget, total budget is about $59.4 million, and about 98% of that budget is PFAS projects. We have about 20 PFAS projects in next year's proposed budget at different stages. We're kind of closing out the first stage of the projects, which is 62 wells, about $300 million. And then we're going to be starting with our next phase. We estimate that to be about 40 wells that need treatment with the second phase, and that'll be about $235 million. But part of these projects are in one phase, and then we're starting up with design. So that's about 98% of the total CIP budget for next year. And then these are all financed with PAYGO funds that we're receiving through the RA. With the exception of the Prado Shooting Range interim remediation project, we are collecting money from the lessee to put away for this project. So since the PFAS projects make up about 98% of our CIP budget for next year, just a brief review of where we're at and where we're going with the spending on this particular, the PFAS projects. So round one through January, we've spent about $215 million on round one PFAS projects. So we have another $85 million to go for the remainder of this fiscal year. And then for next year, we're projecting about $25 million. And we should be done with that first round of 62 wells. So round two, 40 wells, should begin next fiscal year. And that's pretty much design. It's about $33 million. And then the subsequent years are laid out there and gradually increasing. And the majority of it should fall off in 28, 29. So other components of that pie chart that I showed earlier, the refurbishment and replacement program. So we have $27 million transferring in from the RA into the R&R fund. And the budget calls for 47 projects currently at $23.6 million, slightly increasing the reserve. The other major component we have is our debt service, $46.5 million. Of that $46.5 million, it's broken out into three components. Principal reduction, $27 million. Interest on the debt, $18.6 million. And then debt administration costs, which is largely our letters of credit and remarketing fees for the debt, which is $900,000. The other component, retiree medical benefit or other post-employment benefits, also called OPEB, our actuarial determined contribution is $600,000. So that is also in our budget, coming to our total RA for next year. And then new equipment items. These are 14 particular items, basically one-time purchases, our information systems equipment, lab equipment, water quality equipment, things like that. There's 14 items, and it's $900,000. The largest single item in that is a $400,000 item of those 14 items, and it's for new audio-visual equipment in the board and in the two conference rooms. So the RA currently is $624 an acre foot, which you can see under the fiscal year 23-24 column. And the proposed budget for next year is calling for a $688 an acre foot RA. So that's a $64 increase from this fiscal year to next fiscal year, about a 10.3% increase. So this schedule lays out, how do we explain that increase? So if you look at 23-24 column, which is the column entitled fiscal 23-24, the way the RA is calculated is we take our major expenditures, our eight major expenditures, general fund, PFAS O&M, water purchases, debt service, PAYGO for capital projects, OPEB, small equipment purchases, and the R&R fund, transfer in to the reserve. We get our total expenditures, and then we reduce that by non-RA revenue. Non-RA revenue is made up of property tax, interest revenue, rents, BA revenue, gap sales. Those are kind of our major purchases. So we reduce, as you see in 23-24, we had 225 of expenditures. Less those non-RA revenues of $51 million gets us to net expenses of $174 million. We then divide that by the pumping that was projected, 280,000 acre feet, and that's how we come up with $624 for the RA per acre foot. So when I compare and contrast the 24 budget versus the proposed budget for fiscal year 25, there's basically three items that explain the increase. The first row explains $33 of the change or the increase as you can see on the column to the right. And as I explained earlier, there's basically three items that make up that $9.3 million increase. The increases in wages and benefits due to the COLA and the merit increases, that's about $3 million. Electricity increase, about $4.6 million. And then the increase in the district's portion of 50% of the total O&M costs for the PFAS treatment systems in place. That's about $10.8 million. We have to supply 50% of those costs. And that's an increase of $1.9 million. So that explains $33 of the RA increase. And if you drop down to four rows to the PAYGO for capital projects, there's an increase of $15.3 million to collect funds to pay for these projects, a total cost of $535 million that's been going less for about the last 3 or 4 years. So this year we're going to collect $15 million more. So $53 of the RA increase can be explained by that cost. So total expenses, we explained $86 of the $100 increase for the total expenses. And the other big item is the expected pumping, which is the second row from the bottom. So pumping for this budget year is projected at 280,000 acre feet. Given that we have more systems coming online, we're projecting pumping to be up to 292,000 acre feet, which means we're spreading our costs over more pumping, which helps keep the RA down. So that's a reduction of $29 an acre foot. And that those three items explain the majority of the increase from 624 to 688, an increase of $64 from 1 year to the next. So the proposed RA increase and BPP, the BPP we're proposing to leave at 85%, same as it is this year. And the RA increase from 624 to 688, $64 increase per acre foot, or a 10.3% increase. So here, as of today, this is the projection for the RA increase for the next 5 years. We're currently at $624 an acre foot. And as we discussed, that we're proposing to go to $608 an acre foot, 10.3% increase. And then moving forward, from 24 to 25 to 25, 26, that's a little over 9% increase. And the largest reason that it's going up is because we're projecting pumping to come down. We're going to have more systems coming offline that are going to require treatment over the next few years. So we're projecting this to drop about, I think it's 12,000 acre feet from 1 year to the next, which is causing an increase in the RA. And then once again, in the following year, from 25-26 to 26-27, we're increasing a little over 9%. And the majority of that increase is once again due to a drop in the projected pumping due to more systems being offline. And then the increase from 26-27 to 27-28, a little more pumping is coming back as we complete projects, but we're collecting a little more money to pay for that round of projects. And then finally, from 27-28 to 28-29, flat. We've now got these systems back online, pumping's up, and we don't need to collect as much money for these projects. So we're projecting it to be a more level RA increase. And then finally, the headroom. So what this is, what we call headroom between us and Metropolitan Water District's rate. So up at the top, this is a five-year projection. We're currently at about $552 an acre foot headroom between us and the producer's rate for imported water. It's $1,298 an acre foot. So if we subtract out the current RA at $624, less the producer's cost to pump the water out of the ground at $122 an acre foot, we have headroom of $552 between us and the producer's met rate. And then as you can see, that is gradually increasing over the 5-year period. And we expect these rates should be better. Met's rate should be higher in the future after the April Met meetings to discuss their rates and budget. They have workshops then. So we believe that this headroom is going to improve come the end of April. So with that, receive any initial board comments and continue with the scheduled meetings per the calendar for March and April.
Any questions, any comments?
I have a question. So as part of the budget over the next number of years, we're going to be implementing additional PFAS wells, right?
Correct.
And then in 4 or 5 years, we don't have that expense anymore, right? But nothing ever comes down.
Well, we'll see. It could come down. We have to kind of get through this hump. The second phase of PFAS is causing all of this. But once we get through it in 3 or 4 years, we're going to be in really good financial shape. And potentially, we could be in a position to lower the RA. But, you know, it's 4 or 5 years out there and things can change. So, but potentially that could happen.
Okay. And
we may want to start buying met water again. So we haven't been buying met water. Met water, we used to buy close to 65,000 acre feet a year. It was a budget line item of about $50 million a year. Now that's come out of the budget, but once we get back to kind of normal, we might want to pick up again buying met water to put into the basin to raise the BPP even more. So that's something we might want to do in 4 or 5 years. And if we did decide to do that, we wouldn't be lowering the RA. We'd probably have slight increases to the RA.
Where we anticipate going with the GRWS and, you know, the additional capacity there? I thought we were trying to move away from buying met water.
Well, if we can buy untreated met water and raise the BPP, then the producers reduced how much treated met water they buy. And so there's a difference between untreated and treated. And if we can do that, the producers end up saving more money. The producers save money by reducing their treated purchases. So that's something we've done in the past. There's a net benefit. Even though it costs us money, ultimately the producers save money and the consumers save money. But that's something we'll be discussing, you know, 3 years out. You know, do we want to kind of get back into that way of operating?
Okay. And how about the operation of the PFAS wells? And it doesn't seem to be anything in the budget that I'm noticing anyways, that operational cost increases as more wells come online.
Yes,
that's showing up in our budget.
Yeah, it's built into those projections that Randy put up there. Ultimately, we could be paying, I forget what the ultimate number is, around $7 or $8 million a year.
I thought it was up to 10.
It goes up to 10. Yeah. So ultimately, once all the PFAS wells are constructed, our share of the O&M could be around $10 million. But that'll be ramping in as the wells come online.
Okay. I mean, it's a significant increase over the next four or five years it's going to be difficult.
What's primarily driving it is we're trying to pay for all this work without issuing long-term debt. You know, we have $850 million of long-term debt existing. The rating agencies have told us, hey, OCWD, you're getting to have too much long-term debt compared to the size of your operation. So Randy showed we're paying down a lot of principal in one of his slides there. So we're trying to reduce our long-term debt outstanding and not take on any more. So that's why we're paying for all this work with PAYGO, with annual revenue, which causes the large rate increases. So
will these projections be shared with the agencies that are
for sure yes,
selling the water to people that have to pay their bills.
For sure. And, so. Next Wednesday, yeah, we'll present it to the producers.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the producers knew up front when they came and asked us to do this. We warned them this was going to happen.
Well, yeah, this the PFAS, I understand it's going to be expensive and everything, but I mean, the reality of the numbers are pretty significant. Yeah.
But we pretty much told them the reality was.
And then, and Randy mentioned this with this round two of PFAS wells. You know, we got the first round done and pumping has kind of got close to normal, but with round two of the wells, pumping is going to come back down. So the pumping is in the denominator when you calculate the rate increase. So because there's less pumping, you know, we have to charge more mm-hmm. to cover our revenues. So that's hurting us a lot in years two and three here, this round two of PFAS wells that need treatment. So, yeah.
Vice President Bilodeau.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this is particularly painful for me because I think the RA was $85 when I got here. So I guess you can blame me. Randy, have you factored in at all any of the financial recovery we'll be getting from our friends at 3M and DuPont? I mean, we don't know if it's going to be $10 million or $150 million, but have you baked any of that in yet?
I not particularly the legal yet, but I have baked in grants that we've applied for out in future years.
Yes, I know. I believe the House of Representatives passed one of our earmarks today for $1.75 million for PFAS. Thank you, Congresswoman Kim. But so there may be some good news down the road with these financial recoveries, which they should be in the tens of millions. So maybe we can buffer some of this as a result. But I don't know when we're going to know that, in 6 months or 12 months or... It should be coming.
But you're absolutely right. It would really help if we get some of that money from the legal settlements. But we have not put any of that. We haven't assumed anything right now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
For anybody.
Directors Yeo and Sheldon both have their hand raised.
Excuse me?
Directors Yeo and Sheldon.
Okay. Director Yeo?
Yes. Thank you, President Green. And thanks to Directors Meeks and Bilodeau for asking all those excellent questions I was going to ask. I'm happy with the answers. And so I do have one question. Randy, thank you for the excellent presentation. So are the producers' representatives aware of, you know, by looking at this bar chart, it looks like, wow, it's a 50% increase over 6 years. But, you know, I would say all of the retail agencies now have the bills broken down to fixed costs and variable cost, right? And so this falls under the variable cost. Like, for example, in Buena Park, when I get my bill, it's $170 or something, but the fixed cost is like $140, $150. So what I'm trying to say is that this raise in the RA price is going to have a minimal impact, right, on most of the water purveyors. Is that your understanding when you meet with the city's representatives? Because I just don't want to go to city council meetings and having to explain something that really not caused by majority, not caused by us.
Yeah, Director Yeo, let me take that on. We do an internal calculation on what we think our rate increase, how it will transfer to a typical monthly water bill. And for each producer, it's differently. Each producer can have a different rate structure, but a generic calculation for a typical monthly water bill with our RA increase, we've estimated a typical bill might go up $1.75 to $2 a month with this RA increase, assuming the producer just passed it on through to their customers. So, you know, right now a typical water bill might be $65 to $70 a month. It depends on where you live. And we've estimated this could add another $2 a month to that water bill.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Director Sheldon.
Thank you, Madam President.
just a slight commentary on, I think, the comments by Director Meeks and Bilodeau as to, and yourself, Madam President, that, you know, I think all the producers are aware that these costs are going up. But it's like, you know, you go out to dinner and you look, and when you order versus when you get the bill, it seems like it's a lot more when you get the bill from when you order. So it's, you know, that's just a fact. But I have a couple of questions. John, could we get a report back on what has been the employee cost increases over the past 10 years?
Sure.
Or all the, how the, or some number that would be a good reasonable range that would be good to see what that's gone up. We'll need to take into account, you know, as we've added staff for the different PFAS and water expansion services. And my other question or question to you is, if we weren't at an 85 basin production, say we were at an 80 or 70, don't you think, or would it be correct that these costs would go up for both us and the cities?
Yes, yes. In general, if the BPP is lower, it does translate into a higher cost for the cities. So in general, the higher we can get the BPP, the better it is for the cities and their water supply cost.
Correct. You push that to the max, it feels like right now, that which is really good. I just wanted to make that thought. And then on the PFAS, how much of, if you had to break it out, how much of that is the additional monies we have to spend is based upon these new maximum contaminant levels versus what we encountered back in 2019? The additional wells that we project to be going out of service and need to be treated.
Yes, we're expecting the EPA to come out with a 4-part per trillion MCL for PFAS here at the end of this month or early April. And that's where an additional 40 wells are going to get picked up and need PFAS treatment. And that is what's driving most of this. Yeah.
Well, and from a gross dollar amount, what do you think those 40 wells equate to over the course of time?
Well, the capital cost was what, $235 million, Randy, we have here?
Yeah.
The O&M cost, we could calculate that and bring it back to you.
I think you've given us some guesstimates in the past.
I can't do that off the top of my head.
Well, someone else could. We can try to bring it back.
Oh, yeah, we can bring it back with a good number.
No, that's not what I was making a bad joke. So I've heard somewhere in the $1 billion range over the course of the project.
Yeah, the first phase, the 62 wells, we estimated the O&M alone would be over $1 billion, slightly over $1 billion over 30 years.
Okay. So perhaps the total project for round two, the O&M would be less, but together it could be another $1 billion.
Yes.
With the design and construction combined with the O&M. So I say that just to point out we've, you know, these, I guess nothing's really changed in the water quality. What supposedly changed is the science that these maximum contaminant levels have lowered. And from what I've read, you know, we all know the PFAS is a very serious and it's a serious, serious problem at a high level, at a high contaminant level. And so at these lower levels, I'm not seen as much science to justify all the work that's being done. At least at this time, I haven't. So I just want to, you know, if again, for the pleasure of the board, just to keep that in mind as we talk about PFAS. Thank you.
Okay, Director Whitaker.
Yes, along the lines of what Director Sheldon was saying, it is distressing to look at the increase in the assessment levels. But what is almost invisible here is the increase in the pumping percentage is really creating that differential between paying for higher priced imported water, and we're using more of our own resources in that. The only thing that I'd be concerned about in that case is if we had a return round of drought and that pumping percentage had to be lowered, it would have a magnified effect from that point. Have you looked at all the aspects of that, Mr. General Manager?
No, but you are correct. If we got into a long-term drought and we had to we had less pumping, we had to lower pumping because the basin was becoming too overdrafted, it does translate into needing to increase your rates more to recover your cost. Our revenue is almost completely variable. So it's just an unfortunate way we have to operate.
Well, perhaps the ace in the hole is our continued reduction in demand, the water demand, right?
It helps. But
but I am comforted by the idea that the average residential rate increase is going to be quite minimal because of the buffering of that differential between purchasing more imported water, all of the producers doing that. Yeah. That's all, Madam President.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, please.
I think the district did a great job when the PFAS issue was raised and we jumped on it. We did all the PFAS wells or the first round quickly and got them operational and protected our water sources. Is there a significant reason that we need to be as expeditious in the next round, or would it help our budget to spread that out, those next 40 wells out over 10 years instead of 5 years?
Well, we want to get pumping back online.
Right. But I was just thinking you'd have less wells out of service. You would rotate them for a longer period of time, not be slower constructing them. So, okay. But you would rotate fewer out of service.
Yeah. Most producers don't have a lot of extra pumping capacity. They don't really have that luxury you're talking about. Most of them, if they lose a well, then they just have to buy more meltwater. We actually have talked to some producers. We've talked how this next phase is 3 years. And we've talked to some producers saying, hey, can you go 4 years? Mm-hmm. Do you have a little extra pumping capacity? And we have found maybe 7 or 8 wells that can go into the fourth year before they need to be put back online. So we've done what you've mentioned to a smaller degree, though. But in general, if a producer loses a well, they're stuck just buying more meltwater. And then we have less pumping on the groundwater basin. So that's been the kind of the driver to get them back online as quick as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get them back online. I was just wondering if there was a benefit to spreading it, taking fewer offline at the same time and spreading those out. But they seem to be kind of localized, so it doesn't help the overall picture.
And so we're taking all this pain in 3 years to get the wells back online as quick as possible. You could spread the pain over 6-7 years, like the concept you're talking about. But in 3 years, 3 and 4 years, Randy and I are predicting pumping is going to go back to normal. And we can get back to normal in 3 or 4 years. With the concept you're talking about, pumping is going to stay reduced for maybe 6 or 7 years.
So is the regulation that we have to take these wells offline immediately?
No, you have a 3-year grace period.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the driving force.
That's driving the window. Yeah.
Okay. That I understand now. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Sheldon has his hand raised.
Oh,
Director Sheldon. Back. Thank you. Yeah, I want to thank Director Meeks for a question. I think it's good for us just to put out ideas out and strategize and do that more. Maybe have some kind of a session where we can just think of ways to save money. If this was our business, I think we'd certainly be doing that. So I guess, John, if there's something in the questions that Director Meeks was asking, or I don't know if there's any met lines that we can, maybe wheel some water in and have an inter-district distribution working with Met on that versus, I don't know if they'd like that versus buying their water, but just some way that we could take care of producers that are not able to pump, but we can get water to them somehow. Let's think of some new concepts there. They're not all going to be feasible, but we can be brainstorming on that. And it's a dollar saves a dollar earned. And if we have of those wells, of the 40 wells, how much of them are at the notification level where you don't have to treat them, but you have to notify, and they wouldn't have to. And if they would be, if they're, if the users or the ratepayers are notified, you don't have to treat. I know we have that in between area. Yeah. Are any of them part of that?
No, that doesn't apply here with the phase two.
Okay.
Yeah, this is all exceeding an MCL. But I would like to say the best option we have is maybe don't issue $235 million of debt. Maybe we could issue $50 million of debt to help smooth this process, help lower the RA increase. With the first phase, we actually took out, I think it's $100 million of WIFIA debt.
Roughly 95.
Yeah, so the first phase, we did take out a little debt from WIFIA, the EPA loan. So that helped the first phase financing. So for the second phase, we could look at options of issuing some amount of debt to help lower the RA increase in the immediate future. Now, the risk is we're doing the opposite of what the rating agencies are asking us to do. But, you know, it's, we could look at options like that.
Director Amezcua?
Madam Chair, is my mic on? Yeah, okay. I don't know which button, I can't see it. Thank you, John. And thank you for this presentation. I just want to say this is the first presentation of many, correct? So we're starting the budget process, just like we're doing in the city of Santa Ana, which we're part of. And so there's going to be a lot of questions and maybe a special meeting or maybe another meeting, because I know the budget process is very challenging. And so, Madam Chair, I would hope that we would either have a special meeting or we're just going to meet and we're going to...
Every committee
will be addressed.
Every committee.
So the only reason I'm asking that is because this is my first time doing the budget here at the Water Board, if I can recall. I had a council meeting last time. It was a little challenging. Caesar's can laugh there. So I just want to know, because we're going to spend a lot of time asking questions, which is good, but at the same time, at every committee, those questions could be asked as well, brought back here, so that we're not spending a lot of time here doing that. The committees then should be answering, then bring it back to you.
Every committee meeting, every board meeting, right. The budget comes up from now to the end.
And we'll be bringing them back to you here, back to this floor here.
Yes.
Correct? Yeah. And then, John, we have questions, we could send them to you. And ideas on how to save money and spend money and all that good stuff, right? Okay. That's what I want to make sure. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
But one big thing is we don't want to put our AAA rating in jeopardy.
Never. Yeah.
And that you can do by borrowing money. And so we've got to be very, very careful.
All right, that's right.
Okay. Again, thank you, Randy. Okay, our PFAS update. Oh, Chris, you're even excited about getting
Chris's
up there.
Fault.
Chris, I want to go home tonight. You know,
I think we all know I operate quick. You know, good evening, Madam President, members of the board. One thing just to add to that last conversation is because we have that window, that 3-year window for the next round of those 40 wells, we've talked about this internally, and our goal and what we're planning on doing is as we get into that design and we go into construction, we're going to be working on it and designing it and such to that well can continue to operate until the very last moment, maybe a month or two until a tie-in needs to happen. So we can maximize the pumping for those wells that are in that 40 category. So I just wanted to point that out. So as we get into our update here, we haven't changed since last time. We're still at 35 operational, 20 construction and 7 in design. One thing that is changing, there's going to be some new ones on the operational list. And of Anaheim's Phase B 6 wells, there's 2 wells that they are resin loading this month. And that's going to be operational in April. And I'll talk about that in a second. And then this grouping here, I've been saying it over and over the last couple of months. And I really hope that they're going to be operational end of this month into next month. It's just been the standard reasoning that we've talked about, electrical communications delays. And then as you look at the ones in yellow, those are in design. There's 7 of them still, but Of those seven, you've got a Fullerton well, Garden Grove, Golden State, and two in Santa Ana that we are near 100%, and we're going to be going out to bid in the next 2-4 months for those, and then we'll have more in construction, and then the rest are in construction. So I'm just going to focus on Anaheim's Phase B wells, and then Orange, and then Tustin, because they're the ones that are in the heart of construction right now. So let me jump into it. At Anaheim Phase B, it's the 6 wells at the 5 sites. And here's the update. Over at the Santa Cruz site, which is wells 60 and 61, they're continuing working on the building, the well building and the perimeter wall, electrical equipment, on-site pipeline work, and then their conveyance line on Orangewood, the 24-inch pipeline. Brookhurst, similar electrical work, underground utilities, up above ground piping. And then Catella is one of those 2 wells that's going to have that resin loading happening. So they have, again, electrical, chemical equipment work, their pumps being installed or was installed, and then they're going to be resin loaded and operational within a month. And at the downtown site, this is the second site. So both Catella and downtown, they're large producers. They both have 3 systems. That means they can pump about 4,500 GPM each. So really high producers there, and continuing to work at the downtown, again, underground piping, electrical, and the resin loading happening this month. And then the last one on that list is the Willow Park site, and they're doing the vessel installations on that site. So for the other ones that aren't in those 2 that are going to be quicker, they're probably in the June timeframe, maybe in spilling into July for operational. And then as we move to Orange, so Orange, the Phase 2 work that we have the contract for is wells 20, 21, and 22. And then the city of Orange is managing their well 28, well equipping and PFAS construction, treatment construction. Just a couple of shots here. So this is that site the last time I was going through this where it was just a big mud pit from all the rain. So that cleared out and they're working on underground influent pipeline installation at the well 20 site. Well, 22, they're just getting started. We're clearing some trees out there because the pad for the facilities is going to the extent of the perimeter wall there. But then we'll be replacing it with additional trees once the site's complete. So that's the only photos I have for the Phase 2. And then here's an aerial shot for the Well 28 site that Orange is running. You can see it's another one of those really tight sites. The crane there is just in front of the crane. You can see some green coloring. That's the shoring because of it's near the residential homes there and some other businesses. It's going to be in the recessed pit there for Orange Well 28. So it's progressing. They're just working on the equipping and the underground. I'll get a closer shot. I know it's hard to see. It's not very clear, but it's postage stamp size and a lot of work going on in a very small space. So moving over to Tustin, it's the 4 wells at the centralized main plant treatment site. This is on site at the main plant. I'm only showing this because it's only been 1 system installed for quite some time as they're working on all the other above ground piping. And then because they've come to a point where that work's been complete, they're going to be bringing in the other 3 vessel systems later this month for installation. And all the while they're working on pipeline in the streets right now. And then here's just a shot inside the booster station of the conveyance pipeline and some pressure valves, relief valves here. So that's going on at Tustin. And what we're adding to this update today is where are we at with grant efforts? You know, we've talked about it many times and we want to show it in more detail. And here is a list of what we have on our current grant funding efforts. So we're starting off with our Prop 1, our IRWM, Integrated Regional Water Management Grant. And that is through SAPA and DWR, and that is for $4.2 million. That's been secured. That is for Santa Ana Well 31 and Garden Grove Well 19. It was just a combo you had between those 2 sites to be able to get the $4.2 million. So that's the Prop 1. And then we have this long list here, which is part of the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund, Emerging Contaminant Principal Forgiveness Program. And what that is you can get 50% up to $5 million. So to get the $5 million, you got to spend 10, kind of a deal. And we have our list here. We have Tustin, Orange, Fullerton, Main Plant, IRWD, East Orange County, and Anaheim. And all of those have been included on the 2023 IUP, the Intended Use Plan. And we are awaiting the regional board's processing. And there's one more, the Santa Ana Wells 2728. We had to do a resubmit with that one. So that one's in the queue also, and it's under application review. So those are what we have in the current grant efforts with the regional board. The other item we've gotten, it was mentioned tonight, this is the 2023 community grant with Congresswoman Kim, is for the $5 million, which has already been approved. And we have that as showing that's in our pocket for the $5 million for the 2023. And that's being linked up with the Tustin PFAS treatment plant. And then just to show you some of the efforts, even though we're not getting them all. So this next one is the DWR. It's the Department of Water Resources, the Sigma PFAS program. We had submitted an application for the Orange Wells 28 and 29 for $6 million. We were denied, and at this point, we have sent an appeal letter. So we're still waiting to hear. We don't know about that one yet. But this total right here of the ones besides the number 10 there is $35.9 million for what's on our current list. So then one more slide, and that's to show upcoming. What's going on this year? What are we doing? And there's more. There's a 2024 principal forgiveness that we are trying to get on the intended use plan. And that's, we are submitting for Garden Grove, Huntington Beach, Westminster, Golden State. And that's based on those wells would be qualified under the MCL coming out at 4. So the State Water Board, they allowed us to submit a project summary in February. So they're working with us pretty well. And we are understanding that we're going to find out in about May if it made it to the 2024 intended use plan. And if it did, that's $20 more million. So that's great with them. And then as you guys were talking about tonight, it's Congresswoman Kim's 2024 earmark, which was approved through the House. And now it's going for Senate approval of the $1.75 million for PFAS site to be determined to link that with. And then the last one we have on this list is the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, Title 16, the WIN Act, and that stands for the Water Infrastructure Improvements for the Nation Act. And that's to be determined. A couple of years ago, we thought it was going to be a high dollar amount. And just most recently, a couple of days ago, it was shown to have $20 million in total available. So we will be submitting for that also. And that's got a September 30th of 2024 deadline. So those totals add up to $21.75 million. So that concludes the update, and we can take any questions.
Any questions? Any comments? Oh, no. Thank you, Chris.
Welcome.
Good job. Okay. Let me get back to my agenda. Okay, moving on to committee conference meeting reports. Property.
It's in the packet.
The information is in the packet.
Retirement.
It's in the packet, Madam Chair.
Okay. President's report, you already got the information about Congresswoman Kim, and we had a great meeting in Washington, D.C. We did meet with Department of Reclamation, Forestry, EPA. And anyway, we'll see what comes of it. General Manager?
Just one quick item. I want to introduce a new employee, our new Director of Natural Resources, Cheryl Parsons. Can you stand up, Cheryl?
Welcome.
So very happy to have her. She's got a lot of great experience in the natural resources industry. She's replacing Dick Zimmel, if you remember Dick.
Yes.
He retired. So.
Okay. Welcome aboard. Director's report. Yes.
I failed when you mentioned conferences attended. I wanted to share that I had attended a couple weeks ago the Urban Water Institute conference in Palm Springs. And there were some very good ideas after I thought over many years that I've heard it all about marketing and branding and putting ourselves in a much more positive light. There was a panel that was extraordinary at that event. So I'd like to share some of those details as time permits.
Great. Okay. All right, General Counsel.
No closed session and nothing to report.
We're adjourned.